My definition of joy, joy is a state of mind. It's a conscious choice. Happiness is the result of something, right? Like somebody gave you a compliment and that made you happy. But joy is having that inner knowing that like whatever they said, you already knew.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello and welcome to the Learn It All podcast. We are Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It, Darren Bridget. I'm in charge of the professional development content that we create here. And we are joined today by Colleen Greco, a joyologist. We'll explain what that is in greater detail in just a moment. Colleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited to like, you know, have this conversation, to get to know more about you guys. Like, I can't wait.
Well, we're super excited too. And for the people tuning in, this is a great opportunity because we're so much about learning here. And learning is about making change for the better. But so often it doesn't stick. I mean, if learning was easy and people could really make change, we wouldn't even barely be talking about it. And Colleen, I know so much of what you do is about helping people with their mindset and creating that lasting change. Let me give you a little intro and then you can tell us more about your story. Okay. So Colleen Greco is a joyologist, an author. I think you've got a couple of books. You are also a keynote speaker. You're dedicated to this idea of promoting well-being and happiness. You have created the SNAP methodology, which we'll get into. You have a fabulous show called Joy Unleashed, which is a podcast that people can stream. And what did I leave out?
I think like amazing mother and wife of the year, potentially. Mom to two.
Your family sent those in. I think they got buried in the email. We were inundated with messages from your family.
I understand.
Yeah. Please introduce Colleen this way.
Thank you. I think you summed it up. I mean, a joyologist is a term that I coined. I was looking for like a term that encapsulated everything I did. And my husband's first response, and he's going to kill me when he sees this, is he's like, nobody's going to know what that means. That's stupid, right? We're from Boston. So that's like a normal reaction. And I'm like, you know, that's the point. It makes people stop and be like, ooh, what is that? I need to know more. So that's where it came from.
I'm on your side. I think you got to do something that's a little bit arresting, but it can't be so weird that you don't know what it means at all.
Right. And those titles are out there too. I see them every day.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your background? What kind of work were you doing before? What led to your switch into becoming a joyologist, and what's the kind of work that you do now?
Ooh, this may not seem like a natural transition.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a lag, but I think we're back.
Oh, okay. This may not seem like a natural transition, but I was in IT corporate marketing leadership for 26 years. So as you can see, how do you do that? But it was very relationship based. And that part makes a lot of sense. I've always been in service to others. I've always, tried to do whatever I could to help somebody. I've always been an empath, right? So that part made a lot of sense. About 6 years ago, maybe six and a half now, and this is a trigger warning for those listening and tuning in, my then 10-year-old son had a suicide attempt. And it was pretty jarring, as you might imagine. It knocked me to my knees. I had no idea that this bullying was going on. He was the most popular kid in his class. He was at the top of his, athletic game. He was in demand, I guess, is the way to put it. And in my mind, that wasn't the prime bullying target, if you will. But it happened, and there were no doctors or therapists that would talk to us. Again, we live in Boston, right? So keep that, how is that possible?
Yeah.
But it ended up being such a blessing. After about 100 different phone calls, I finally said, enough is enough. We have to do this ourselves, right? I can't waste any more time. Initially, I personally didn't handle it well. I ate and drank a lot, as you might imagine. I mean, people do that when they're under, you know, extreme stress and trauma. Mm-hmm. And I put on a lot of weight really quickly. And I got up to these weights I hadn't seen since my pregnancies. And very quickly, I realized this is not setting a great example for him, my other son, or my husband. Like, this isn't how we heal. This isn't how we do this in this house. This isn't what we're about. And so I sought the help of a nutrition coach because I just felt like I need help somewhere, somehow, something has to change. And as I was losing the weight, I'm getting to the punchline. As I was losing the weight, I was about 35 pounds down at this point. And I said to him, can you help me develop these strategies that, you know, will help me keep the weight off in the long term, right? Like getting to that mindset piece. I know there's a mindset piece here and we haven't touched it yet. I keep waiting for him to bring it up. And he said, I'm not your therapist. I was like, wow, yeah. Wrong answer. Except it was the right answer because it gave me an instant idea. And I said, if you don't see the connection between these two, you don't have a business being in this business. Like, this is not, it's not about the food. The food is just the weapon I chose, or the alcohol was the weapon I chose, yeah. But I could have very easily chosen something else.
Yeah.
And so now 4.5, almost 5 years later, I've kept the 52 pounds off. That's how much I lost in total, but I have developed this SNAP method and this practice of coaching other people to heal themselves, because so much, actually 100% of what our issues are stem from our mindset. And if we don't resolve that, you will be on this yo-yo diet. I can't tell you how many clients will come back to me and say, like, I need to lose like 15 pounds before I go on vacation. I'm like, I don't want to work with you. Like, that is, if you want to do the mindset work, the real work, let's look in the mirror at the ugly stories that are keeping you stuck. That's where I shine. Mm-hmm. Sure, I can help you lose the weight, but then you're just going to be on this constant hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. So long story long, that's what brought me where we are today.
That's a great story. My question is, I am, you know, we talked about this a little bit off stage. I'm one of those yo-yos. Mm-hmm. And I also see, how do you help your clients when they look at it and they say, you know, I have 52 pounds to lose and it seems really overwhelming and you don't really know where to start. How do you help customers that way? Or where do they start?
That's a great question, because I had that exact comment. I was sitting with a friend at a soccer game saying, like, I think I need to lose 50 pounds. And she's like, girl, like, A, you're crazy, but B, like, why don't you just go climb Mount Kilimanjaro? Doesn't that sound easier? Like, that's a lot of weight. And I tell clients all the time, like, you will have a number in your head, but I don't want to hear it. Like, well, I'll document it, so I'm aware, like, you want to lose about 30 pounds. So I kind of have a sense, but very quickly I move them off of that into these non like weight bearing goals. So maybe it's like one of my issues was body dysmorphia. And so I had never worn a bikini my entire life, which was really important to me. It was just one, I don't know, you guys probably have your things. That was one of mine. When I finally put it on, I was like, I don't care what the number is. Like, I look great and I know it, right? That is what matters. And that, when you fix your mindset, the scale can say whatever it wants. It, you know, we give it way too much power. We give it way too much influence over our day. I'll have clients check in and be like, you know, the scale's up 2 pounds. That's it. I give up. And I'm like, you've got to work on the mindset, man, or you're never going to get there. And so we try to like have these small, incremental goals that we can chip away at so that as they progress, they realize over time that that number is a lot closer than they think.
And a lot of times, I think you're right. For me personally, and it's less about the number and, you know, just, I guess, like you said, joy or, you know, feeling better about yourself, feeling better in your clothes, right? So, you know, thanks for sharing that.
It's such a journey, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like that James Clear stuff where it's your identity is part of it instead of having like a goal. I'm going to lose this much weight. And then you establish a pattern to get there that's not really sustainable for like the rest of your life anyway.
It's more about like pivot it. What do you want to gain? Do you want to gain self-esteem? Do you want to learn self-love is a core component of what I teach. So women come to me and they're like, I've never had self-love. I'm like, I've got you. I can help you figure that out. It's easy once you're aware of what the things are. And then I put you on a path to achieve that.
But Colleen, isn't it? Cause it's acceptance. You're saying acceptance, but you have a combination, which is acceptance and the ability to change. Like you actually have kept the 50 pounds off. So how do you bring those two things together for people?
Well, it's really staring your mirrors right in the face, right? When those triggers come up, and we all have them, there is not a single person on this planet, including, you know, like the greats like Gandhi and Mother Teresa had limiting beliefs. They did. They probably just didn't share them with you, but we all have them. And it's a matter of staring those, and I call them mirrors, staring them in the face and being able to say, what is that about? There's something there that I am supposed to learn. Haven't mastered it yet. And once I do, I have broken the emotional connection with it. It no longer consumes me. Then that trigger comes up the next time and it just drives on by. It's like, they're just words. You don't even notice them.
Yeah. That's deep work though to do, isn't it? To figure out what your triggers are. Like how do people do that on their own?
What I'm running right now is a great example, and that's something that people can join, you know, at any time. It's called the Get Unstuck Challenge. It's a 7-day challenge, and that kind of gets them started, right? It kind of gives them little nuggets, little breadcrumbs to do on their own. We do some contemplation work in a private Facebook group, so they feel very protected and respected. Then I also have the Pathway to Self-Love Guide, which is something like, it's kind of like a DIY, solution. It's like a 54-page guide that every single week they get a chunk of, they do the work, they do a lot of reflection and contemplation, then they get the next week, right? And then for those that want deeper work, I have group coaching and private coaching options. So it just depends on what the person feels like they need. But in order to start, you know, I think a lot of people can't just jump to coaching. They're like, I don't know you, I don't trust you. And that's a big leap to just bare my soul to you.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start the challenge. And very quickly they realize, wow, I need some help with this. This isn't something I can do on my own. Even me, who has been doing this for years now, realized I had another shadow or mirror come up that I didn't realize was causing me serious back pain for the last year. So I have this stored emotion that
Somatic.
Has caused me, has caused me to throw my back out 8 times since last April, which, you know, I'm not that old yet. And I just made the connection like on Sunday. This is actually happening real time.
Yeah.
So I'm still doing the work too. But, you know, the deep traumatic stuff, that's gone and it'll never come back, right? Because I've done that work to release it.
Damon, we should do this challenge. Cause I get a bit of a yo-yo and last night I was like pouring through the whole house looking for hidden chocolate, knowing it's somewhere.
But really,
that's the question I have for you as well, Clay, is setting yourself up for success too, right? You know, as far as it's a challenge, you know, I have 2 little kids and it's like a minefield around my house with, Cheez-Its and chocolate and muffins. And it's just, how do you, I guess, create the discipline to being able to stay away from that? I guess you could fit it in as Darren as part of our challenge. Yeah. But how do we stay away from that?
Yeah. Colleen, cravings. What about cravings?
Listen, I have them. I am powerless against the chocolate chip cookie, right? Real talk.
Yeah.
So the SNAP method, not trying to weave into that, but that is exactly how you do it, right? Is it's designed to get you to, you know, really stop and sit with the thing. So you're on the hunt for chocolates. Yeah. Maybe something came up. I don't know. Were you triggered by something? You don't have to say what it is, but you were triggered, right? So you were like, where's the chocolate? Okay. So that's what the SNAP method is for. Precisely. And it was something that I developed that day when my coach told me that he wasn't my therapist. I went right outside of my front lawn and I just was like, I am figuring this out. Cause when you tell me no, it's like, you want to see Boston come out? I'm like, I'm ready. So it, SNAP is an acronym. Yeah. S stands for stop. And this can be the toughest part. You have to stop and like sit with it and say, I'm triggered. The trigger's here. Like it's at my front door. And I just like I can't hide. They're looking in my windows. Mm-hmm. I seriously just have to stop and just let it wash. And part of letting it wash is you bring your blood pressure down. So you don't have that instant like reaction and just allow it to sit. Mm-hmm. The next step is notice. And that's when I tell people to take out their journal. I have a journal, but there are a million journals out there. You find the one that works for you or a notebook or something bigger than a sticky note. But N stands for notice. And this is when you notice the things that are happening, right? You notice that you're having visceral, like physical reactions. Your heart rate goes up or you start to sweat. I get something in my throat usually where I'm like a golf ball. Mm-hmm. But everybody has a physical reaction and everybody's is a little bit different. So it's important to note, because as you start to like practice this more and more, you'll be able to identify the trends. Mm-hmm. But also notice the story, right? This is the time to write the story down. And this is not the time to judge it, mm-hmm. right? So if you believe Damon did something to set you off, it doesn't even matter if he did it. That's your belief. Write that down. So this isn't the time to judge it, but just capture it and capture the environment. Also, you know,
say quickly, Damon, you're not going to read my notebook.
This is a safe space, guy. We all love each other. But also notice what's going on around you, right? Did you have like four fiery meetings before this, right? That would be good to note. Let's kind of like capture what's going on in the day, or fight with your wife or something, which I'm sure never happens. But
yeah, never.
But that's notice. And so that is something you really want to capture like right away, because that is like the essence. Mm-hmm. After you've done that, you've allowed your blood pressure to come down some, or you've allowed like the symptoms to kind of chill. Then you move to A, which is accept or analyze. Mm-hmm. And this is when you go back and you review your entry and you can separate the facts from the emotions. Was it really Damon? Mm-hmm. What did he actually say? He didn't even say that, now that I think about it, right? You start to kind of like peel back the layers of the onion and inspect for the truth. Mm-hmm. And when you separate the truth from the emotion, you can start to really see the story for what it is.
Yeah.
And your belief is he did something. But as you look at the truth, you're like, I did that. Had I asked that question, I would have gotten a very different answer. Oh boy, that was me. Okay. Right. Like you start to see it and it's super powerful. And I can go into a story of, so relatable around, I can never do anything right, that illustrates it. But that's A, that's analyze. And that's a really important point too.
Can you share the story before we get to B, or do you want to do it after B?
Ooh, the I can never do anything right. It's a good one. Yeah. This one, I bet every single human on the planet can relate to. So, you know, the kids at that point were, I don't know, like in middle school or something. And so they were old enough to be left home alone first thing in the morning, while we went to the gym. And I had always gone to the gym in the morning, and my husband decided I'm going to join her. And I was like, that's great. Cause I know if something happens with the kids, I'm going to leave, not him. Not cause he's like the world's nicest guy. Let me just say that first and foremost, like he would leave in a heartbeat, but I won't let him leave. I'll do it. Cause I'm mom. Right. So I'm like, great. But let me just like lay the groundwork that if you're coming on my morning shift, you have to leave early to start the morning shift back at home. And I'm going to finish my workout. Cause like, this is my sacred time. I've got to keep this for myself. And he's like, fair. So we'd been doing this for a while, lock the kids in the house, go to the gym. And this particular morning I ran into somebody. And so he had left to go back early, but I was late leaving to join him. Cause I was kind of like batting cleanup. And he didn't share with me that he needed to be to work early that morning. So I get this fiery phone call And my husband has like no fire. He is like the nicest guy. So you knew you were in trouble when you got that phone call, right? And you're like, but then Boston shows up and I'm firing back and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And
makes for a nice morning.
Yeah. Right. And then I walk in the house and the kids are upset and it was awesome. And so I like kick everybody out, get them on the bus. And then, but that I can never do anything right was a response on that call. And it was a story that just was on repeat like 4 million times that day. And I can never do anything right. I can never do anything right. And I suddenly stopped and said, that feels so cruel. Like, is that really like, am I that bad of a person that I can never do anything right? Like, mm-hmm. Let me reflect on that. And so I did, and I made a list of all the things that I had done well that day mm-hmm. and all the things I had done wrong. And it wasn't to prove that I'm like perfect or anything, because I'm certainly not, excuse me, but it was to prove that that story was junk. There was one thing on the list that I had done wrong, which mm-hmm. was not call ahead and tell him I was running late. The list of things that I had done right was like in the 70s.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So is it true I can never do anything right? No. How about you give yourself grace and a little bit of compassion and space and say, I made a mistake and I'm sorry I didn't call in advance.
Yeah.
Big deal. Like, no one died. Nobody's bleeding. We're fine.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. I talk about that a little bit when it comes with imposter syndrome. Say, for instance, you're a public speaker or whatever it is you're doing, right? Or you interview for a job and you really prepare. And then let's say it doesn't go exactly the way you want it to. You beat yourself up over it, right?
Yeah.
And what I like to try to reflect back on myself and help others is give yourself a little grace and maybe even a pat on the back for the effort and trying. 100%. And acknowledging that nobody's perfect. And I really like what you said too about all the things you did, you know, that you actually did do right. And I think a lot of people, you know, including myself, we beat ourselves up more than giving ourselves grace and really looking at what we did well.
Totally. Oh,
I will force clients all the time to give themselves high fives, like literally like high five, right? Like I make them do it on camera.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, they kind of poo-poo it at times, but I'm like, this is so important. You have no idea what you are changing in your brain right now by doing this high five. And so go ahead and poo-poo it, but I'm going to make you do it anyway. In fact, do it now. You two do it now because you're awesome. High five.
Yeah.
Do it.
High five. I think it takes courage to do. Like if you do it right, it should actually take some effort and courage because everything's adaptive. So if I am in some sort of situation that I find painful, like I hate being embarrassed. So let's say it's suddenly having this horrible experience, you find a way to adapt, even if it's maladaptive, so it doesn't happen again. So you rehearse all this stuff in your head to try to protect you from ever getting in that situation again.
Yeah.
So if you open it up and say, you know what, I wasn't that bad. You're kind of opening the door to like looking at it realistically, but that could happen again. That you're taking kind of a more courageous, slightly tougher path to handling adversity in your life instead of trying to just shut it down and run away with a strategy so you never feel that way again because you completely avoid any situation that might put you there.
Yeah, you're right. And whether you worry or whether you don't, it never has any bearing on the outcome.
Yeah.
So how about you save that energy and that space for things that really matter?
Yeah.
But that actually gets to the last point, which is P, which is practice gratitude. And that is the most, that is like tying it up in a little bow. And you need to be thankful for that trigger because it's your body's way of telling you that there's still work to do and it keeps you humble.
Yeah.
And that humility goes a long way. You know, when I make a mistake now, my kids and my husband are like, whatever, we didn't even notice, right? Like you realize you beat yourself up for the most ridiculous reasons and nobody even notices, right? Yeah. It's like, I had an email go out the other day. It was supposed to go out at 8 a.m. For some reason, it didn't go out until 8:30. And I was like, I'm sure I did something wrong with the tech. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
There was an issue with their server. It wasn't me, right? Like, don't do that. It's silly. But I caught myself and I reversed it. But you know, that would have kept me grounded for weeks.
Yeah. So Colleen, you're clearly somebody who honestly I like. I'm drawn to somebody who has the who kind of just naturally is going to say, maybe I did it, instead of like, it's always somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
And so, but you must have clients sometimes who it's like, they never think they're the problem, but it, you know, but it actually, they're always thinking it's somebody else, and they almost have the opposite problem. Do you run into that situation?
Oh yeah. I have a couple right now actually where, you know, they're like, well, it's not me, it's them. I just have this like, you know, like sugar addiction. I can never break it. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not working out for you. And that's why we're working together. And so there are different ways in and through the front door, which is kind of what you're saying is, you know, when somebody's open and willing to do the work, when they're still feeling the need to blame something externally, I just go in through a side door or a window. Sometimes it's a window.
Yeah.
looking at your, the SNAP method, you know, stop, notice, accept, practice gratitude. I was just thinking about the A in there, and it's kind of like what you and Darren were just speaking about, because A could also be accountability. I've had friends and coworkers who they always like to blame, you know, the triggers on somebody else. Like it's their fault. Like, oh, you upset me, so I went out and ate, and I think it's, you know, people sometimes just need to take accountability for their actions.
And the more I heal, I will tell you this, the more I see, like when we were on, I was talking before we started recording that we were doing the college tour process with my son a couple of weeks ago. And I saw like constant miscommunication between families. And I was like, if you could just see that that was coming from a place of love and not criticism or shame or whatever, like it would totally change the trajectory of your day. But you're short on time, short on attention. So it's like you have that immediate reaction. And what if we just took a step back and applied some grace to the situation? How different would your day be then? Mm-hmm. It was like, all I wanted to do was pounce on different parents. Like,
yeah. 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 You should do that. Actually.
Here's my card.
Yeah, that could be the next show. I'd like to see that actually. Yeah. I wanted to touch on this idea of joy a little bit. We were talking about it ahead of time, and mixed into that, I just want to acknowledge that part of your story with your 10-year-old son. But that's just, you know, we were talking. I struggled with depression a lot when I was a teenager, and know what it's like to have those thoughts coming through my head. But a 10-year-old is just that feels shocking to think that could happen. And I'm sorry that for all of you that happened. But you made the connection between that and this other work that we're talking about, and kind of the connection piece is joy, like from what your son was experiencing to what you used also to help you move forward and to bring your family together. It was all kind of encapsulated in this idea of joy. And you don't mean by that just like be happy all the time. No. Can you explain a little bit more, like how does joy tie all of this together?
So my definition of joy is a state of mind. It's a conscious choice. Happiness is the result of something, right? Like somebody gave you a compliment and that made you happy. Mm-hmm. But joy is having that inner knowing that like whatever they said, you already knew, right? Mm-hmm. And they can say it and that can make you happy, but joy is having that inner knowing. Mm-hmm. And with us, you know, again, we didn't have the support of the medical community, which is fine. Like I don't fault anybody. I'm actually so grateful that this is the way it happened now.
Yeah.
Now. But in the early days, I was right out there outside that door on my front like foyer rug, bawling my eyes out, saying, this is not my life. I didn't sign up for this. This is not who we are. Like the Grecos are better than this. We should not be in this situation. How did it get here? Right. Yeah. All of those questions that you might imagine. Contemplating my own suicide, which I have just very recently started to share. I don't know why I didn't. I just didn't. But in that moment, joy was the thing that came to mind, where I really believe it was a message from God who said, you're going to shower him with love. That's how you're going to get through this. Because love is the answer to everything. When you are faced with tension, shower with love. Faced with tension, shower with love. And so that's what we did. And we just made the conscious choice to shower him with love. And when we felt like we couldn't give any more, we'd like dig deep into our bones and find more and give him more love. And so joy in the smallest of moments was just this catchphrase that we used around the house. Because in the early days, again, like you're living second to second. Mm-hmm. It's too much to think about what you're going to have for lunch, right? Like that is so far in the future. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to get to the next second, how do you do that? And you do that through these little bits of joy. And when you piece them together, they start to make up more and more of your day. And that's, again, like how this joyologist term came to be, because it was like, when I'm fully like centered and aligned and focused on joy, I can take care of anything. I can handle anything that comes my way. Cause I know it's not happening to me. It's happening for me. It's a totally different mindset.
Colleen, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you somebody who has a lot of courage is your son.
Yes.
And my question for you is, because I've, you know, in doing my research, I've, you know, you've mentioned this in pretty much every show. How did you have a conversation with him? How did you get, he obviously must be comfortable with you sharing this story. I mean, that's it's a very vulnerable thing out there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, thank you for asking that. He's an amazing kid. They both are. My husband too. I don't want to leave anybody out. Yeah. But him in particular, he's an amazing kid. He very early on, so he lost every single friend he had. He didn't have an entire play date for a year, which is a big thing when you're 10 and 11, right? Like that is all, that's your life. No one reached out to him. And so when we started to kind of rebuild, and I talked to him about how I felt this was my calling, and I felt like I needed to help people that, maybe needed the help that I didn't get and that he didn't get. He was like, absolutely. Like, this is who I am. In fact, as he's in the college process, this is the story he's going to tell, because it is so much about who he is. And he has, I will cry if I get too much into the details about how amazing he has risen to through this. I mean, the fleet of friends. He had his junior prom recently, and there were 35 kids in that picture.
Wow.
Not one play date for a year, and 35 kids in that picture that have been in this house more times than I can count, like real friends. And it's all because he allowed his heart to lead, and he got out of his head and he got into his heart. And he, you know, he doesn't talk about it a lot, because I think he doesn't want to come across as a victim, but I talk about it because I know so many people that feel like it's this taboo topic to talk about, and you've got to make it safe. You have to create a safe space where people can talk about it and have, I think, the inspiration that you can come out the other side bigger, better, stronger. The phrase that I used at the time, trouble is your transportation, I gave to him. And I kept saying, trouble is your transportation. Trouble is your transportation. I got it out of a book somebody gave me as I was, you know, going through this. And I was like, just, we have to trust that this is going to bring us to a bigger, better, more beautiful place. And he really allowed us to lead him in that direction. He's amazing. He still doesn't know how to clean his room though. I'm going to say, like, he's not perfect.
He's like, find the joy in that, Colleen. Just find the joy in that.
Slob. And when we went to go see all the universities, he was like, yeah, Clemson, because they make the best sweatshirts. Like, what?
I really like the way that you explained this joy idea and how I think it sounds like your son is able to use this, because if I understand it right, it's not that you try to be like necessarily happy with everything or only expose yourself to situations that make you happy. It's like, oh, I'm happy that I lost that, or I'm happy this happened, or I'm happy that went. It's more like you bring love to every situation.
Yep.
If you bring that love to that situation with other people and for yourself, then you can look at it realistically and still feel like this is your life that's transporting you forward, whether it's trouble or, you know, something to celebrate happy. It's that piece. I guess it's like a John Lennon strategy moving forwards, right?
You're 100% right. I mean, my other son is going through some things right now, and you know, so it isn't always like the happiest, go luckiest moment.
Yeah.
But I can love on him and I know that's what he needs from me. He doesn't need my answers or my like ability to control it or whatever. So I get to love him through this rather than this is a stressful situation for me. Like I get to love him through this. So it's just, it seems so simple.
Yeah,
it does. Hard to discover, but it's easy to keep.
Well, part of it is that it's a particular way to understand what love means. Mm-hmm. Because love is such a catch-all for so many experiences of how you love. So when we say, you know, just love the people in the situation, it's like people don't really know what it means. But if you could get this specifically, if you understand it this way, it feels like it does actually open up doors for yourself and for collaboration and working with other people and just, you know, a better world.
Yeah. And once you stop controlling it and pouring more love onto it, it just takes care of itself.
Yeah.
Colleen, I got a question a little bit off subject, but you know, we actually do get, we get some good questions sometimes from the audience. And I wanted to share this one. What about the same concept? This is going back to the, I guess, triggers. What about the same concept for people who starve themselves rather than eat during stress or trauma for overwhelm?
So if I understand, like, would the SNAP method still apply? Is that?
Yeah. I guess that's the question. Would the SNAP method?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just another weapon. Not eating is another weapon. Drugs are another weapon. I could go, the list goes on and on as to what people use for weapons. That's another weapon. And that is a like self-deprecating, self-hatred type of behavior that once we look at it and we're able to like kind of evaluate what's going on, you can very easily remedy that. I mean, people fear food. It's a very real fear. But when you teach them about what it does to your body and how it fuels things, I talk a lot about gut health. I mean, even the foods that you eat, how that changes the chemical makeup in your brain. It changes the hormone production, hormone creation and production, and then absorption. I mean, like all of that is connected. And so starving yourself is, just as bad as overeating.
Well, sure. Yeah. It's control is the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about this? I definitely want to get this in, and because I'm sure that this comes up all the times in your conversations. And I have an example I'll share with you after. Where does the Ozempic and those other drugs fall into your nutrition story? Enjoy.
She is fired up. Okay. Can I just tell you that there are gyms okay. So first of all, before I like make a judgy comment, I want to say there are lots of people that are on those drugs for the right reasons. First of all, but there are even more of them that are on it for the wrong reasons, causing a shortage. So the people that actually need them can't get them. Mm-hmm. Very bad. Gyms like fitness centers are putting like Ozempic labs and Wegovy labs and Trulicity labs in the gym so that you can access those drugs more regularly, more easily. And it is like the absolute most, it scares me to my core. It's so irresponsible of the medical community to do that. They're on these things for the right reasons. People are always looking for a shortcut, but if they realize that they address their mindset, you know how fast you can change your mindset? Like that. And the weight just melts off. And then it's not a problem anymore. Like you don't have to keep doing these things and then do the next thing that comes after Wegovy or Trulicity. I definitely have a firm opinion on that one. I also have an opinion on keto. Intermittent fasting can be good in moderation, but that's also like everything gets taken to the extreme. It starts off, I think, well-intentioned. Keto is actually a treatment protocol for epilepsy. It's not a diet. Mm-hmm. That's scary, right? Somebody noticed that there was a weight loss component to it and they're like, I'll take that and I'll go create a program. It's like, no, just learn how to respect your body, learn how to eat and fuel it properly, deal with your mindset, and then go live your life. Like I tell clients, I don't want you to check in with me anymore. Like, just go live your life. Check in with me for a cup of coffee or something, sure. But like, don't come back.
I agree with you. I agree on the keto Atkins diet, and now you have this epic. The story that I was going to share was not. I have a very good friend for the last 20 years, really intelligent individual, and struggled with weight really, really bad. And would go up, 50, 60 pounds both directions. And when he was at his highest, just very depressed, and he has the financial ability to go out and work with a lot of different counselors and everything. And for him, I don't think he was diabetic. Going on one of those, what Govee, whatever it's called, it's been an absolute game. I mean, it's a different person, And I'm not saying everybody should go out there and do it, but he's lost the 75 pounds, kept it off, and has gone from sticking in the house to going out and traveling and doing things. So, but I guess it also comes down to who knows what the long-term effects are of any of this.
Well, that's part of it, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, keto, there's fatty liver disease and heart disease that people don't think about with all the ingestion of those fats. Mm-hmm. With Wegovy and Trulicity and Ozempic, I don't know, other than like liver and kidney, what gets directly affected. There's lots of theories that are kind of like emerging. Somebody was talking about early onset dementia is in a early stage study. It affects your mind.
Work on your mindset.
It's just too early to tell.
I thought it was supposed to like stop working after like 5 or 6 years or something anyway.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I said, I do think it exists, like for the right people, it's the right solution. But that's a very small percentage of the population, and it is just taken off like wildfire. Once Hollywood gets a hold of something,
you're in trouble.
Yeah,
sure.
Then you've made it. I need to go out to Hollywood for like a week.
Yeah. Go Boston on Hollywood. That's your new
right.
and parents at checking out colleges.
Yeah, right.
How
about I've heard you talk about this. I think it's on your website. Talk a little bit about joy in the smallest of moments.
Yeah, so that's how we started to heal, was just identifying joy in the smallest of moments. And I think the easiest, I use it a lot in the winter. But we're just coming out of winter, so I can still use it. So when I illustrate this point, I like to talk about taking my dogs for a walk in the winter. And I do not care for winter at all. Like, Colleen likes to be warm. Put me somewhere in the south with the sun, I'm good. So taking my dogs out, like I cringe and I get all made up and everything with all the hats and scarves and stuff. Now I can choose to sit there and think about the fact that I'm freezing and I wish they would hurry up because they of course have to sniff everything within a 5-step radius. Yeah. And so walking like a mile will take an hour. Yeah. It's crazy. So I can get really frustrated with that, or I can get really like aggravated and annoyed and all the words, or I can look for the joy in it. It's really peaceful outside in the winter, right? It's really quiet. It slows me down. I can kind of reset my own chemistry. I can kind of jump into their energy and wonder, what are they like? What are they chasing? Is it a squirrel, or is it like a leaf going by, or a snowball, or something like that? So tapping into that energy and saying like, how can I, live more like them and find joy in those moments where I might otherwise be aggravated, because your energy can only go in one direction. Yeah. So does it feel better going in the aggravated, annoyed direction, or like the cute, fun, frolicky direction?
Yeah.
I choose that one. So, and you can do that with anything, like this morning when I noticed my son hadn't cleaned up his room and it needed to be cleaned today, I was like, that is so cute.
Even bringing love to that.
Right. And I'm like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
At least all those, by the way, all the clothes are clean. They're just on the floor.
Yeah.
But nobody's dying. Nobody's bleeding. Yeah. It's like not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And it happens to everyone. So how about you find the cuteness and the humor in it and not get annoyed by it?
Yeah.
My example of that just reminds me of last night. So I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Oh yeah.
3-year-old's a boy and he's got more energy than anything I've, it's amazing. And just, I was on bedtime duty last night, and there was nothing I could do to get him to go to bed. You know, and he's running around and he's knocking off toys. And instead of getting frustrated, I said, look how cute this is. And I'm really going to miss this in 10 years. You know, this state, a state of mind. And that's kind of helped me a little bit, stay a little bit more patient with it.
Yeah. I mean, until you step on a Lego and then you're right, then you, but that's fine. Like you will, can I build with this level? This
Lego? Yeah. I'm so grateful that I can feel this pain right now.
Yeah. It's live.
Yeah. No, but it's true. It's all those little things. And shout out to Danielle here for calling out how great nature is. I mean, that's just really one of the best. And I think people lose sight of the fact that it's those little things that's actually the best stuff you have in life. It's the rosebud thing. It's like, that's the stuff you can often remember are just little moments of joy. That's what life is.
Sorry. You got me excited. Go ahead.
Well, that was it. That's really it.
Well, as I was going through this transition and realizing like I was not present at all in my life and maybe missed signs, I don't even know. I've never bothered to evaluate. But one of the things I did was like, am I really happy? Like, am I really like centered in joy, really fulfilled with this corporate IT marketing job that I've been in that industry for so long? Like, is this what I want people talking about at my funeral?
Yeah.
Like, no. So what do I want them to say? And how do I build a life around that? And so that was, you know, definitely a step in the whole journey. But I mean, that's what you're talking about. It's like, I want to be known as somebody who, you know, made small changes in a few people's lives, leaving it a little bit better than the way I found it. That's my goal.
That is, Colleen, a perfect transition into how we wrap up the show. Because unfortunately, it's really just we're at that time we need to. Oh. I think we could carry this conversation on forever. But people have gotten to know you through your own podcast. Well, let's just take our listeners. They've gotten to know you through the show, a bunch of things about you. What's something that people might be surprised to know about you that maybe not a lot of people know? Like, for example, you're, you know, secretly a Trekkie who goes to conventions, or I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah.
I don't think that.
Okay, that's fine. I keep hoping somebody will say that. But anyway.
Don't think I'm a Trekkie.
I don't know people don't even know what that is anymore, but I guess that's cosplay now. So never mind.
Yeah. Well, I worked at Walt Disney World in the college program. And when I graduated, I got a job as Goofy. That was pretty fun for a little while.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Came home because of a boyfriend, not my husband, the guy before him, but I did that for a little while. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun. Hot.
In the costume.
Remember, Colleen likes hot, but so if I'm saying it's hot, it was like 4,000 degrees. Yeah.
You look through like a little mesh in the neck or something, right?
Like the mouth depends on the costume. Mostly it's the mouth, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Colleen, one thing people don't know about me, most people, is that I just got off a Disney cruise. So I saw Goofy and everybody else. And for anybody out there listening who has children under, say, 11 years old, and I'm not a big Disney person, my wife is, I don't think there's a better vacation that you can do for a kid.
I agree.
The Disney cruise is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So agree. And you probably went to their private island. I did that too.
Yes.
Very nice.
Highly recommend it.
Did you bring like your costume with you, or did you have to give that up when you left?
No, I did that a couple of years ago, Darren. So
yeah.
I don't know if it probably does now, right?
Yeah. Colleen, it was really fun to have you on the show. Thank you for the really terrific insights, the vulnerability that you brought, and let's just say it, the joy that you brought to the show. It's just really fun.
I love it. Thank you guys for having me. It was a great time well spent. And hopefully it was something that gave your audience something to think about.
Thank you. You were great.
Colleen, how can folks get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. So through Instagram is the easiest way, at the Colleen Greco. My name was misspelled when I was born. Youngest of seven. My mom was like, whatever, I don't care. Yeah. So that's one L, C-O-L-E-E-N-G-R-E-C-O, at the Colleen Greco.
Great. Colleen Greco, joyologist, thank you so much for being with us today. And we'll see you out there on the college campus tour.
You bet.
All right. Bye, everyone.